All right, let's bring the meeting to order. The invocation and the pledge, Dr. Newsom.
Heavenly Father, as we gather today for this meeting, we come with hearts full of gratitude for the opportunity to serve and work together. May we approach our discussions with open minds and compassionate hearts, always remembering the value of respect and kindness in every word we speak and every decision we make. In your name we pray.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Prouty, is there any?
There is.
Okay. All right. Five, okay.
Jennifer Beeslin.
Yep. Jennifer Beeslin.
Jennifer Beeslin, my address is 36, pardon? Avenida Madeira. You can come on over afterward. Right at 10 Florida, 34210.
Thank you.
Ready? Okay. As our college board, you play an integral role in not only ensuring the fiduciary fiscal responsibilities of our college, but equally important, ensuring academic excellence. My name is Jennifer Beeslin, and I teach public speaking, and I also teach interpersonal communication. And I would like to invite you to one of my classes. I teach the number one soft skill that employers seek, effective communication. Students in my classes learn how to competently and confidently communicate. They learn real-world communication skills, like how to negotiate on their own behalf, how to have challenging conversations, and how to navigate challenging personalities. They learn how to manage conflict. They learn how to collaborate, build nonverbal communication skills, and they also learn how to listen effectively and speak effectively, and listening might just be more important. So I want to share with you three students that I've had in the past that have benefited from my class. They've come back to me. One student, when I first started teaching here, was in interpersonal communication. She was from Haiti. She came back to me, and years later, she said, give me a lunch. I said, sure. She said, I want to tell you, I have two books by my bedside. One is the Bible, and the other is interpersonal communication. She said, in Haiti, my father left our family, and that brought great shame on the family. And I learned in your class that I can use words and not my fist to communicate. Another boy was in my class. This was speech. He was half Thai and half American. He was bullied in high school. He said he almost quit high school. And then a guidance counselor said, hey, why don't you do dual enrollment? And he did, and he said, oh my God, I love learning. That young man in my class, I said, okay, when you are on a TED Talk, you're gonna come back someday and you're gonna invite me to that. You're going to invite me to it. That young man is now an aeronautical engineer. Today, going back a few years, actually quite a few years, I had a young man in my speech class, faced extreme hardships in his class, and he landed himself in prison. He said, you know what? This is not the life that I want. He pursued his education. He won the Outstanding Student Speech Award. 17 years later, that student is now my colleague. He works here at SEF. So we are not the ivory tower professors that often people think we are. We do not teach one class a year and do our research. We are on the front lines, and we are ensuring your mission, which is academic excellence, by ensuring our students earn the education that they deserve. So please come to my class. I'm going to provide our list of speakers today that would like to invite you to Susan Morocco. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Next, we have Philip Travis.
He's one of those.
I
just changed my ringer from the duck quack. Well, it's not the duck quack anymore, and now I think my ringer's not auction if anybody calls me. Philip Travis, 213 44th Street West, Bradenton 34209.
Thank you.
All right. So this right here is a challenge coin. I think that's the appropriate thing to call it, but I'll tell you what it means to me. And I have two of these now. Thank you, President Gregory, and I hope that means that we're, you know, on the right path. I keep this on my desk. I keep one at school on my desk. I keep one on my home desk. And when I look at it, it reminds me of who I am and what I do. Why am I here? Who am I? Phil Travis. No. I'm a history professor. That's what I do. That's my love. That's my passion. When I attended a two-year school like this in Virginia, it was teachers at a very similar school who inspired me. Okay. And so I'm a history professor. What do I do here in the classroom? My labor, my service, my love, my passion is educating our community, our students, in what it means to be historically minded, something that I call a skill. The skill of being historically minded, how to use the past to think about the present. And I try to bring every bit of my passion in there every day when I go in there and teach. I try to channel the inspiration of the people that mentored me, and a mentor is not just somebody that is when you're working on your dissertation, I had those too, but they're also people in your formative years, right? So I try to really bring that passion, inspiration to try to engage students and try to always reinvent what I'm doing to meet the current learner so we can educate our young people to be engaged citizens, to be historically minded. So I'm here to invite you also to come to my history classes. I do quite a few different history courses, but American history is one I'll invite you to, part two, where my students learn civic literacy, civic engagement, what it means to be a participant, engaged participant of this great nation. I also teach EUH courses. Some of those are highly specialized, like World Between the Holocaust, but the one I specifically invite you to is my Western Civ part two course, which is a European history course, but it's really about the Western tradition. So come there and students learn about what it means to be, you know, part of the greater Western tradition, which all we understand, I think, you know, how significant that is to this country and the world. And so thank you, President Gregory, for the challenge coins now, because they are a reminder to me. And my passion, my service, my love, what I do, it's not about just, I do research, but it's not about just doing research. It's not about, you know, high-minded conversations at conferences, though sometimes we have them. First and foremost, it's about my students. That's what matters the most. And I remember the inspiration. I try to bring it. I hope some of you maybe will come to the class if you have the time. And maybe you won't want to leave. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil. Next, we have Robert Scholler.
Phil, we're in Virginia.
Blacksburg. Hello, I just wanted to introduce myself. My name is Robert Schaller. I'll tell you a little story about me. In the mid-2000s, a young lost kid moved down from New Jersey to Bradenton, Florida with his family. That lost kid was me, I'll say it. In 2009, in the summer, I decided to stop getting dirty, working on cars, getting all nicked up, cut up, and greasy. And I said, you know what? I'm smarter than this. Let's go figure out what to do. And I took a math class. Faculty inspired. Kim Gieslin was my first math teacher here, and she saw something in me that I didn't see yet. I continued to take math classes, and as I finished up my math classes at SCF, I went through all of the experiences as an SCF student, and I loved them all. I was the student assistant in the math department, so I got to meet all of the math faculty, and that sparked my passion to be a mathematician. One of my other professors, Altai Oskiner, told me, you're going to go tutor the student athletes because they need a tutor. And I said, okay. And I loved it. Seeing those light bulbs go off in students' faces, I think I found my passion. So that, again, the faculty said, let's go to some conferences. They took me to math conferences. I was president of New Alpha Theta, the high school and two-year college math club. After that, the faculty said, you're getting your degree. I went to University of Florida, and in 2014, I graduated with honors with my Bachelor of Science in Mathematics, and I came back to become a faculty member. I taught developmental courses, 00180028, and I loved it. So the faculty again said, come here, go get your degree. You need a master's degree, and we can hire you full-time, and I loved it. I got a full free ride to University of West Florida and a paid graduate teaching assistantship. I again graduated with straight A's with a Master of Science in Mathematics. And where did I go? Here. There was a position open, and I applied for it. And I came back, and again, I love it. 7 years later, look at me now. Some burnout who could barely solve a linear equation is now teaching students and spreading that passion. And I just want to be up here to support faculty and say I hope all of you support faculty as well, because they are the pillars that hold this college up. And if you neglect those pillars, bad things will happen. Please come to my classroom. Please see the passion in action. I beg you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Next speaker is Linda McKay.
Meanwhile, Julie Jakeway received a $20,000 raise, 15.1% over her 2023 salary of about $154,000. Chris Wellman got a $17,000 raise, 15.2% over his 2023 salary of about $112,000. I'm sure other administrators have received or will receive raises too. Yet no union faculty member makes more than $84,000, and faculty salaries remain far below monthly. Faculty were truly your number one priority. Administrative pay would be frozen, and recent administrative raises and bonuses would be rescinded until faculty pay is brought up to market. At yesterday's faculty administration negotiations, administration offered a one-time $2,000 bonus taken from the technology budget, with the warning that if faculty didn't accept quickly, the money would disappear. Meanwhile, Julie received a raise 10 times that amount. Again, it's hard to believe that was your number one priority. When faculty asked the administration what the plan was to bring salaries to market if SCF received state funding, there was silence. When we asked about a plan if no funding comes in, again, silence. I tell my students, if you don't make a plan, you're planning to fail. Administration is planning to fail. Yet, we're told faculty are the number one priority. There's a plan for technology. There's a plan for a parish campus. There's a plan for everything except faculty salaries. Money has been moved from the unrestricted cash fund for countless initiatives, but not to address faculty below minimum pay. Did you know the New York Post just wrote an article that Costco is planning to hike pay for most of its U.S. workers over $30 an hour? I could make more money working at Costco than at SCF, and I wouldn't have to bring work home. Imagine hearing that a retailer values my accounting degree, CPA certification, MBA in finance, and doctorate in accounting more than SCF does. That would slap in the face. It's time for action. You can come to my class anytime you want. You better make it this spring. You might not be here in the fall.
Our next speaker is Catherine Bezerra.
Missouri. I am 207 32nd Street West, Bradenton, Florida, 34205. I need to take a deep breath before we start the timer. It's okay. Okay. Whew. I'm an art historian. I teach a class called Art Appreciation, among the other things that I do here. I have spent my life figuring out, you know, what is my true north, what is my true guiding value, and it is definitely grace. I start the morning at 8 a.m., maybe the first day, and we say, we're all going to die, because that's our human frailty, but then we go from there, and we learn to decode what we see. We talk about belief, sacrifice, work, forgiveness, loss, and transformation. So we did a tour Friday of 120 students, and at the end, the best question that really came, it was 40 from three different high schools. We toured the whole building, talked about options. Tillman was a great, great place to come and figure yourself out. Very affordable. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. They were responding. The best question I got, we talked about how many times in my life I've pivoted. Why did I pivot? How do I have courage? I thought, that's the best question. And then she followed it up with, she looked me right in the eye and she said, I think you'll tell me the truth. How do you earn something like that? Lost my brother to suicide. I was ambushed professionally. My parents died right before that. Then my best friend in the whole world was murdered in her bed in New Orleans. The crime's unsolved. I came back and two 16-year-old kids hit my son and I almost head on. That's what earns me the trust. I'm authentic and I have suffered, but I have found my way to resilience, which is what we want our students to do on their way to graduation. I found it in art history. Sat next to a man Friday night after those tours. He's having bourbon meat, 30 years in the Army. He's lost his faith, he tells me. Not right away. We start talking about the regatta. He's doing 900 units on the beach after Milton, the poet who wrote Paradise Lost, the blind poet who helps us find beauty. Nothing is amiss. Synchronicity, whatever you want to say. Connections is what I teach. I had just done a lecture on a painting called The Calling of St. Matthew here in our faculty lecture. It's the shortest calling in the Bible. Follow me, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. The soldier's name was Matthew. I showed him the painting on my phone, and I talked to him about what transformation looks like as you go around the table, because the cardinal tells this 20-ish-year-old painter named Caravaggio at the turn of the 16th century, paint me the moment Matthew changes. Paint me that moment. Heck of an assignment for a man who doesn't have liturgical training. But a French friar who lives in the church with that painting explained it to me on YouTube, and I was able to come in and do a part of my lecture on what transformation means. And I'll tell you the difference I learned, the difference between zero, nothing, and one is tremendously different than the difference between one and 10,000, because it is the moment of change that matters. Thank you. You're welcome in my class anytime. It's 8 a.m. before the work of the day really begins.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, next up, we have the President's Report.
All
right.
Thank you, Chairman. Bravo, faculty, for sharing stories, especially about the students and your inspiration to serve. And we look forward to hearing from Jason Reed and Susan coming up. So thank you for that. Just a few things to know. First, you've got the presidential report of all the meetings that I've had over the last 30 days or so. You can see we were particularly busy working on our legislative priorities when we were in Tallahassee at the beginning of this month. And I'll just reiterate here for the board our three priorities legislatively that we're asking our delegation to work on. Number one, of course, is movement towards getting us up even with the other colleges in the Florida college system, and that's the $17 million a year you've heard me talk about several times. So, any help working with our delegation and advocating for that is welcome. The second and third priorities are number two would be completing the final tranche of funding for Parrish. So we have filed that appropriation through Representative Robinson and Senator Boyd. And the third one is to move the students at the Collegiate School in Venice out of the portables and into a permanent building. And so we've estimated that cost would be $15 million for a new building down there. So that's the third order, and that's in priority rank. I guess the last thing I'll cover is to say thank you so much for your support during this ceremony, and huge, huge kudos to the entire college community for throwing, I think, a wonderful party to put the college in a great light for so many people who had never been here before, never donated. I think we really put our best foot forward, and they've had tremendous success in the amount of money that they've raised for our students. During the ceremony and at the dinner, I talked about higher and faster in terms of my vision for the future of the college, and I'll just say that we're going to put some more details on that. We'll work with the college community as a whole to kind of flesh that out for you, but I won't keep you in suspense. Higher means we want to take our graduation rates higher. We want to take it to number one in the state. And faster means you just look at the average amount of time it takes a student to graduate. Right now, the two-year degree students average about 3.2 years. So I'd just like to speed that up a little bit. Both of those things are student-focused, student-centered, because it puts them on the path to success much faster. So more to come in coming months as we continue to work on that. That's all I got, Chairman.
All right. Thank you. Next up, we have the mission moment with the Business and Technology faculty, Jason Reed and Susan Melikar.
I do apologize. Susan Melikar was not able to make it. I, for some reason, thought the board meeting started at 6 o'clock, so she had a family thing going on beforehand. So, unfortunately, you guys are just stuck with me. And I have a hard act to follow, because my fellow faculty members at Pursuit did a fantastic job. First off, I want to thank President Gregory and the board members for allowing me to highlight my computer programs here at the college. We have several different programs that I feel are very beneficial to the college and to our students. So our most popular degrees that we have here at the college are our AS in Computer Information Technology and our AS in Computer Programming and Analysis. Those two programs prepare students for workforce-ready jobs right away. Once they finish up those degrees, they're ready to go out into the workforce and find a job. Each one of those degrees has certificates that are embedded with them. So as students are working towards that AS degree in order to get a job, they can earn some of these certificates that will help them become employable before they finish that AS degree. Now, we offer two different types of degrees and classes here at the college. We have a general AA degree that transfers off to the university for students who want to move off to a bachelor's, a master's degree. And then we have AS degrees, which are more for workforce ready. One thing that I'm pretty proud of is over the past couple of years, we developed this computer programming specialist degree. It's comprised of all AA transferable classes. And what that means is any student who is dual enrolled in a high school or collegiate school, they can take these AA classes as part of their electives. They can graduate with their AA degree and move off to university. But they also get a certificate in computer programming, which is pretty cool for the students to graduate, especially with our collegiate school, not only with an AA degree, their high school degree, but also a computer programming certificate. Other degrees that we offer here, Network Systems Technology, which I think is poised to become one of our bigger degrees here. If you know anything about businesses, you rely on your networks, you rely on cybersecurity. And within this particular degree program, we teach those skills that keep that network running. And then we also have our Technology Project Management degree, which teaches students how to help manage small projects, how to manage IT projects within the organization. As the faculty members that were just up here were highlighting, faculty is key to our programs here at SCF. And our faculty in computer science are no exception. What sets our faculty apart from other faculty at universities is our faculty have really real world experiences. So if you take a look at Stephanie Cook, before she became an educator, she had over 12 years experience in IT. She was a programmer, a systems analyst. She taught and implemented Office applications. Bill Culver, he was 20 years in IT. He was actually the interim director for City of Sarasota. He's done everything from networking down to information security awareness. Fun fact, he also has a CPA. He started off as an accountant. Susan Melikar, 15 years experience in IT, software development, data warehousing, software development, data analysis, business intelligence. I'm a little bit of the oddball out. I did own my own computer business for a while. I'm actually former law enforcement. I did 15 years at the Sarasota County Jail. What was nice, I was the unofficial IT person there. I helped implement some of the systems that we use today. I helped implement the inmate tracking software that tracked when inmates left their cell block within different programs. I helped maintain the chaplain database. Did a few things there. Fosterville, gaming computers, business computers, all of that kind of stuff. So a technology degree here just makes sense. If you notice, I have a few different career fields up here, but we're far affordable compared to our university counterparts. We have flexible classes, we have online classes, we try to meet the students where they're at. Obviously, faculty with lots of experience, when we talk to students, I was talking to Susan Melikar before this presentation. One of the biggest things that she gets from her students is how thankful they are that she has real-world experience to bring into the classroom. And it's just not teaching some type of theory or something out of the textbook. And we have a lot of high demand for information technology professionals. Just in this area alone, from 2023 to 2024, 8.5% increase in computer network support specialists, 6.5% in computer user support specialists, 21% in software, and then overall all other computer applications, occupations, 10.6%. So the demand is there, and we're trying to meet it. Other things that we have here at the college, you know, small interactive classes, they get personalized attention. Once again, that's Susan Melikar, the person who was supposed to be presenting with me today. She does hands-on, real-world experience, project-based learning. I mean, she's in there coding with the students, teaching how to do it. We're also implementing some of the latest technology. You'll notice that you have these keychains in front of you. These were 3D printed by the students on our 3D printers here at the college. Don't tell marketing that we're not marketing approved. I apologize.
That's okay. I love that. Approved.
But, so our students are getting experience with 3D printing, building liquid-cooled PCs. We're teaching them how to do multi-monitor setups, build computers, virtual reality, artificial intelligence. We're starting to incorporate some of that. Arduino boards, you name it. We're trying to implement the latest technology so our students stay up to date and current. Not only do we have our classes, but one thing I'm very proud of is we give our students a lot of experience outside of the classroom. One of our clubs that we have here at the college is FBLA, Future Business Leaders of America. And the reason I bring this up with our technology classes is this is at the state framework. This is one of our clubs that we can use as experiential learning for our students. And what's really cool is they go off and they compete at the state and national level in competitions such as business interview, marketing, computer applications, computer programming, cybersecurity. We actually have our state conference next, almost next month to this day. And what's really awesome is over the past 3 years, our students have won over 20 competitions at both states and nationals. They do workshops, professional workshops. They meet with professionals. They learn how to work on their resume. Just a lot of awesome skills that they learn at these conferences. Once again, all of our different awards that they won over And this is actually, this is just I think last year's haul at our state level. And you can notice all the first place winners that we had at states. And that's competing with all the other colleges in the state of Florida. So looking to the future, because we don't want to, you know, just rest on what we have a cybersecurity analyst certificate that's coming live in the fall of 2025. We're going to start looking at expanding that into a cybersecurity AS program, because cybersecurity, once again, is not look at the news today without seeing some type of a data breach or your data has been compromised in some way. We've talked to our advisory board. They want our students to know networking, very hardcore in our cybersecurity program. So that's what we're focusing mainly on, is networking at its fundamental level. Potential start date on that is fall of 2026. We're also looking to incorporate artificial intelligence to all of our programs. We're trying to teach them how to do prompt writing, how to use AI, and then we're also looking at potential certificates in artificial intelligence. That's it. Thanks for your time. If you have any questions.
The three of you cover all campuses or all IT classes on here?
So, as of now, there are four of us. We are in the process of hiring for a fifth one. Normally, we have two faculty that are stationed on the Venice campus, and we have three of us that are stationed up here on Bradenton, and we can go back and forth between Bradenton and Bradenton.
And why don't we have a four-year degree in this discipline?
So we do have a four-year degree in leadership and management with an emphasis in technology management. After the cybersecurity and the two-year degree in cybersecurity, I am looking at a bachelor's degree in cybersecurity. So that is something I want to bring. Bringing a bachelor's degree to a community college is a little harder to do than just an AS program. Yes.
Congrats on building an incredibly relevant is not even the right word, timely, necessary program for today's economy. I think it's also so neat that many of you are in the role of teaching, that you have had your own business or you've worked in corporate America. So that just further strengthens what students can learn from you. Can you tell us a little bit about your connection with business and helping students find kind of the handoff between getting their certification or their degree and entering the workforce? Certainly there is a need for it, but especially in the local regional area.
Yeah, so a couple things. So we do offer, one of our courses in our class is an internship class. So we do promote internships for our students. We actually have some of our interns have come to work here at the college. I know we've got a couple that work for the city of Sarasota. So we try to partner with our local businesses. We have an advisory board that when we meet once a year, we talk about internship opportunities. The other thing that I try to encourage my students, I'm very active with the Chamber of Commerce. I'm actually on the technology committee for the Manatee Chamber of Commerce. And I try to encourage my students to get involved with Manatee Young Professionals, which is a fantastic organization that allows them to network with other local businesses and professionals. So we are looking at fostering internship opportunities and anything else that we can do to get our job.
One of the assistants that they could, since you are involved in that, I don't know if the Manatee Chamber has this, but Sarasota Chamber has this, and I've actually used it, is they will reimburse up to $2,000 if you hire an intern at least, I think it's 15, now it's 15, it used to be 12, but now $15 an hour, they'll reimburse for it. So it might help you get over the hump if you go to the Sarasota Chamber of Businesses and say, you know, you're not out anything, almost, if you give our students a paid internship.
I appreciate that insight.
And I've had three interns, they've been amazing, they've gone off and done amazing things, but I can't afford them anymore. So yeah, I hope Manatee Chamber has something similar, but I know that Sarasota Chamber does have. And it's specific to industries that have a need for a workforce, so the insurance industry as well as cybersecurity, so I know you guys are on the list of needs.
Do you have a placement percentage on how many of the students get placed with, you know, within months or years. I know, like our nurses, most of them are placed before they get done, it seems like.
So I did have some data pulled when I was creating this. I saw everything in that data that I pulled anywhere from 83 to 100%. Like I said, I'm not sure how the data was pulled from our institutional research, but it seems like our replacement rate is pretty high.
Okay.
Well, thank you again for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for agreeing to do it. And thank you for the work you're doing with SBLA and those students. It's really inspirational to see them, which is what, you know, seeing you, I think it was at Dr. Bell's farewell, which is, you know, kind of on the spot I asked you to do this. But it's a standing invitation, I can tell, it's for the faculty in the room and for those that aren't in the room. If you want more time to do a presentation on the particular offerings other than the public comment period, let us know. Just let me know, let Susan know, and we'll get you on the schedule.
All right. Next, we have enrollment and retention. Dr. Hale and Dr. Nielsen.
Good evening. We'll be going over our enrollment figures from the fall, and then Dr. Nielsen will be sharing some of the highlights that I've been doing. Over trends, student success, and our retention. So this chart kind of overlays unemployment with our student headcounts, and you can see how those affect each other over time. It's starting to recover, and that trend started to settle back in post-COVID, where it's kind of predictable. Unemployment goes up, and generally enrollment will follow. Average class size this fall up to about 21.7, pretty good range. If it gets too high, you end up with capacity issues and things like that, where students don't have enough choices left. You know, you don't want it to be 100% of every class, but you can see the experience students get here. Nice teacher-to-student ratios. If you have children go off to the universities, those are often far larger numbers, so really good. So this one, I'll kind of explain what we're looking at first. Each of these lines begins in the fall. The top line is our rate of persistence from fall to spring for our students, the darker bluish purple line. And then the darker green is our rate from fall to fall for our students. The lighter colored lines, they do trail behind because the data is not kind of lagging for me to get that data. But those are the national trend numbers. Not quite sure, still haven't quite figured out why the national numbers from fall to spring are so low, but they're a little closer when we get to the fall to fall numbers, but we're still ahead of what those national trends look like.
Dr. Hill, we just explain, I know you've explained this to me before, but the 77% persistence from fall to spring, isn't it basically the same from spring to the following fall too, but
yes.
That's the net effect?
Roughly speaking, 77% of 77% is about 58. So it kind of translates from one to the next. Does that as we look at subsequent years as well, but not quite as quickly. So students, about 77% of those would still be present in that following fall and so on. So once they've been here fall to spring, they stay they're a little stickier after that, but those numbers do carry through. And this is our course completions per attempt. See that number continues to rise. And that, you know, obviously is related to our great faculty and all the student support systems we have around them. And we'd like to see those numbers continue to rise, but those numbers are coming up as well.
That's fall 2024?
Yes. Yes, that's fall 2024.
Oh, I didn't know if you were predicting the future.
I don't know what happened to that chart. That is my error. Yes, ma'am?
Does course completion equal course passing, or just that the course was
passing? Yes.
Finished. Okay.
Any other questions,
Dr. Hale? So when you're talking about national averages, is that all higher education or
no? Similar institutions.
Okay.
Public two-year institutions.
Okay.
I either get those data. This one comes from National Clearinghouse. We usually iPads or National Clearinghouse, and then they break them down that way. that we can see our specific sector.
And do we know how we fare against the other 27?
In persistence and retention rate, I don't know right offhand. We do know a little bit more closely where we fare for other things like graduation rate. I can look into it and try to get back to you on that.
Well, I mean, the national average is probably a better comparison, but we're also trying to be number one in Florida, so it'd be nice to know what those numbers are.
Yeah, I can speak to that. If we're number one in Florida for graduation, we will be in the upper echelon nationally. The number one school in Florida is extraordinarily close to the number one student, or number one school overall in the country. And that kind of also plays out when you look at the Florida in those national rankings. Higher ed in Florida is number one, and that's between the university and the college system. So
okay.
Those things are right there. So number one in Florida is effectively right up there with the top of the country.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Springing ahead. Want to show you, some of you are familiar with the dashboard. Just want to walk through it for you. This is spring enrollment as of the 23rd. What you can see up here is load hours. That is our credit hours, and we are up 4.1% compared to last year in the spring. And then our students, that's our head count over there. So we are up 3.38%. It does break down by our counties, both Manatee and Sarasota, as well as by our gender. And then you can see where we have some of the breakdown of our students. Our collegiate schools are listed on there, continuing, dual enrollment, and then our degree types. So our AA versus our AF degrees, and so on and so forth. So this is a pleasant chart to look at to see our enrollment growth. Both Dr. Hale and I were constantly waiting for that load hour to go over 80,000, and it's there.
It's higher than it was this morning.
It was. So this is great projection. These are the enrollment goals that we've been talking about. With enrollment, there's applications. So looking at our application spring 2024, we had 2,366 applications. This year it was 2,545, so we saw an increase in applications. As students apply, the funnel starts happening. They apply, right, they register, enroll, attend, retain, persist. So we want to see that funnel, but we want quality applicants so that our funnel tends to go like this versus a huge influx and we see a narrowing. So that's what we call the enrollment funnel. Looking now for fall, right, projection out. If you remember what our fall looked like, that's our typical application time frame. We had a couple hurricanes in there, so we are watching the trends. You will see right now, year to date, last year, fall 24, application numbers 5,349 was the total. As of today, or the 24th, 1,378 in 24, and in 25, 1,271. So we're down. We're trending down from where we were last time. So this is really important for us to make sure we have quality applicants and or we are being responsive to students that maybe were not in a place or had the capacity to fill out an application because their schools were closed, their houses, technology was down, not available. We had to cancel because we were in the schools and we weren't open. So that is something that we constantly monitor to make sure that we can be responsive to that and not necessarily reactionary. This has come up before. Are you guys out and about? What are you doing? Yes, we have attended 84 high school visits. We have what's called special populations that can go from anywhere from our ESOL. So some of our events where we present recruitment information in Spanish to our families across the communities, middle school students, or other programs. So we've had 74 visits and then group tours on campus. We just heard of a group tour, 120 students from three high schools. I will tell you, my enrollment management team is amazing. We constantly look for faculty connections. February 13th, we have Booker on campus. and they met with the nursing department, music production. They had an admissions presentation along with entrepreneurship and a tour. So we are constantly looking at ways to integrate and get these students in front of incredible faculty members and instructors who are providing this amazing service. Counselor breakfast. This is lengthened of, well, what do you talk about? What do you do? I included the agenda in there and then some sessions that they can participate in and connect with all of our services across the campus. So there's our incredible list of attendees. Last but not least, I'm very, very excited. Higher, faster graduation rates, right? Time to degree. We are bringing a graduation ceremony to Venice. We are doing the grad walk. If you're familiar with the grad walk, it's a non-traditional ceremony. Students and families, no tickets required. They come with their family. They walk into the auditorium. They have their name read. They're presented their diploma. They have the amazing photo opportunity. And then they go celebrate with their family. We're doing that in Bradenton and Venice. Right now, we have over 30 students RSVP'd for both campuses. So we are really, really excited for that new launch. And then our traditional ceremonies, of course, 4:30 and 7 o'clock in the Neil. That is our standard traditional pomp and circumstance for graduation. So those are some spring highlights. Questions?
The 7.7% decline in applications.
Yes.
Is that mostly due to the hurricanes, do you think?
A lot of it, yes. When we're not able to do our application workshops, we lose a lot of face time with students. Many of our high schools will open up labs for our recruiters to go into, our enrollment specialists, and it's one-on-one time to go through it. I think that is a big impact in it. We could see with this incoming class that they are delayed. And there is an opportunity, and you can never predict it. It gets me every time that all of a sudden we will see spring break come and go, Easter holiday come and go, and then it's the mad rush. We will also see when it's decision day that they may not be admitted into their first choice, and then we will see the follow-up. Scholarships also help. Scholarship application is launched as well, so they can start to see the financial opportunities for that coming in.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Fund Accounting with Julie J. Clifford.
There's no fun.
Yeah, I'll say that.
I emphasize the D there. No confusion.
Yeah, from the fun stuff to the boring stuff. Last meeting, we had a question about fund accounting as we're heading into the spring budget season. I thought we'd go over fund as a refresher for your information. Maybe.
Just do it from the top of your head.
And me.
Right here. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I can start. The resources that we have at the institution are allocated by fund. And by fund, I have one. Thank you. By fund, we mean it's sort of like checking accounts. We generally don't mix from one fund to the other without special permission by you or others. So some of them are considered current funds. Those are the ones that we use to fulfill our missions. Some are considered on a current a daily basis. It's how we use our funds to operate. I'll get a few of them listed here for you. Funds 1 through 6, if they're green, they're generally unrestricted, which means even though you may have some state rules about how you spend state appropriations, it's generally our most useful and free to use fund. Fund 2 is red because it is restricted. That's where our grants are. They come to us with rules about how you're going to extend them. They include restricted fees, like the student activity fee. The students are involved with managing that set of funds. Fund 3 is auxiliary. That's where the things that we do to make money are encompassed. Bookstore, vending, food service. In past years, those have been, I won't say lucrative because we try to manage the cost, but they provided some input, some revenue for the institution. With Amazon and computing technical assistance for books, that's shrinking over time. So.
Julie, can you give us a ballpark, you know, kind of quantify that over the last 10 years, let's say?
So it used to bring us $600,000 to $800,000 a year, and we're down to 3 in the current year, and this is the bookstore, 3 in the current year, and I expect it to be significant for that's next year. Mm-hmm. Food service, we used to make $20,000 or $30,000, not a lot of money. This year we're paying $250,000 to keep food service.
Thanks.
So that will be something we'll be discussing as we move through the budget. Fund 5 is where our scholarships are. Again, it's red because it's restricted. Whatever the donor tells us that gives the scholarship to us, we must follow. And Fund 6 are agency funds. So, for example, a student group raises money for a particular event or activity. We house it for them in Fund 6 and help them manage it in a good way. Non-current funds are those funds we use for construction, renovation, these are not current operating dollars. We have Fund 4, here's restricted, it's red on there. It's where we house loans and endowments in the past. We have about $500,000 fund balance here right now. We're looking at how best to use that for our students. Fund 7 is the unexpended plant fund. That's all of our renovation, renewal, replacement, construction, maintenance, those are Fund 7. Fund 8 is retirement of indebtedness. Despite what you might have heard in recent meetings, the college has no debt. We don't operate in a debt capacity. We occasionally will buy for the collegiate school iPads from Apple on a pre-year lease purchase for a few thousand dollars, but other than that, a copier occasionally, we have them. And Fund 9 is where you house the accounting for all your physical assets, less depreciation. Right now, our Fund 9 balance is about $101 million. That's all buildings, property, equipment. There's a few other things that you may hear that us talk about that we're just going to explain a little bit. PECO, Public Education Capital Outlay, is one of the legislative funds for construction renovation. CIF is a capital improvement fee that students pay, and we use those for technology enhancements for students, capital improvements for student-related activities, and improvement of real property. CONDS is Capital Outlay and Debt Service. And that comes from the vanity license plates, the specialty plates you can buy. You get a certain percentage of that. It's about $200,000 a year. And the last one on here is, you may hear that in this process, is SAD, some of you use digits. This is money we used to get from the state to maintain our properties. And it was last received in 2018. So the expectation from the state is that we use the existing funds we have for property management.
Julie, sorry, can you back up?
Yes.
One question on the sum of the year's digits. What's the amount that the college used to receive prior to 2018?
Well, $600,000 or $800,000 a year.
Is that a sum of your digits really a depreciation format, isn't it? It's as opposed to straight line or accelerated, isn't that the way they're reimbursing us?
Yes, when they were calculating it, yes, that was included. But they didn't calculate it for us. Well, they still calculate, but we don't pay as much.
Much like the health plan.
Oh,
we implement
like
it,
the health.
But they don't pay for it.
Questions and answers.
What license plate fee do we get a cut?
We get a percentage of all of them. Oh. I always thought we don't have a specific plate for this institution,
right.
That it would be related to that, but it is in fact a percentage of the whole specialty pool.
Interesting.
Those entities that do have one get the bulk
yeah.
of the money for each of them. Like University of Florida has one, they get $2-2.5 million a year. But you have to pre-sell, I don't know, 5,000 of them to even
right.
qualify.
So is it the education license plates or all of the license plates?
All right. Thank you, Julie. Next up, we have approval of non-financial consent agenda. Does anybody need to remove anything?
I have a correction that I think needs to be made.
Okay.
On the page 31 that ended with me. I have no problem approving it, but mm-hmm. I think there's a typo.
Can you point it out for
yeah,
us?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. When they're talking about the costs, yeah, where it says definitions of accounting class A, it's just a small typo. The fund says 23,000, and then the next one says 230,000. Can somebody explain that?
What page are you
on?
Yeah,
on page, sorry, 32. For definitions of accounting. Funds is 23,000, org is 230,000.
Oh, fund org. So you're looking under across from class A?
Yeah.
Fund org?
Yeah. Is that a typo or?
Is
there an extra
yeah,
zero?
Or the fund number or
it's
number?
No, it's the fund number.
It's the fund number? Okay.
It's not a dollar amount.
Okay. Yep. That was just a.
Okay. Way to closely read it. all right, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, motion passes. Next, approval of financial consent agenda. Does anybody need to remove any items?
I have some questions. Can I ask the questions now, or should we remove them?
Yeah. Let's go now.
Okay. On for page 38, the monthly, it says service expenses decreased by 43%. I know that's a broad category, but can you give us a little bit of an example of what services consist of and why they're down?
It says service expenses increased 43%.
Increased. Our expenses yeah. increased 43%.
Yes. There's a reason we paid the property insurance at a different time
okay.
in the cycle that we did the previous year.
Okay. What does services usually consist of? Obviously insurance premiums, but...
Big time. property insurance premiums and other contracts for services.
This is a really broad category. Okay. All right. And then on 39, it says service expenses decreased by 37%. And it said it decreased mainly due to out-of-district travel and other contractual services. So when teachers go out of district, we no longer are obligated to pay them?
No, we still pay them. It's just what they're participating and attending at this point, and the timing's different. I think that had to do with the hurricane.
Okay.
We didn't have as much travel in the fall.
Okay. And other contractual services, so those would be the other contracts. Okay. I think that was... Wait, hang on. One more. Sorry, I read them. On page 43... We reallocated the budget for the addition of Meltwater Newsletter Service for $3,000. What is Meltwater Newsletter Service?
You don't know what Meltwater Newsletter Service is?
What is that?
It helps us to track all of the public relations recognition things we're receiving, whether it's social media, TV, radio.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So is it we add it, we reallocated to add it, or is it new or recurring?
We added service this year.
just wanted to know what it was.
What a name.
Yeah, right?
Meltwater.
Meltwater.
So I had questions. The first ones you did, I happened to talk to the president about them yesterday, though. So.
I didn't get my packet yesterday.
No?
I got it late. I'm sorry.
Oh,
sorry about that.
All right. Yeah. All right. Is there a motion to approve the financial consent agenda?
So moved.
Second? Okay. There's a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion passes. Chris Willman's name is next to facilities projects list now. Which is totally irrelevant because I don't need to bring it up with Julie anymore. I can get it wrong with Chris now. Okay. Public notice. We have a public hearing for final action on a revised rule. So the chair recognizes Mr. Prouty.
This rule revision is largely cleanup. You can see from the date box that this rule hasn't been attended to since 2009. What we're doing in the first paragraph is clarifying that new hires, that approval is by the president and not by the board of trustees. That presents a timing issue a lot of times. We hire somebody on the first, we don't meet until the 25th. We're just making it clear that it's the president who has the approval of those new hires. In the second paragraph, again, since this was a 2009 rule, that language hasn't kept up with the law. So what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish, is not to state the laundry list of protected classes more than once. So what we're doing is referring back to the college's normal non-discrimination rule and policy, so we won't have to, every time something changes. This one, for instance, is missing GINA. That's the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act that passed in 2020, maybe. So again, what we're trying to do is make it so this rule doesn't have to come back again.
All right, thank you. So public notice has been given for the following rule for final action. Exhibit L, appointment of personnel number 6HX14-2.06. Public hearing is now open. Are there any public comments? All right, seeing none, the public hearing is now closed, and Exhibit L is ready for final action by the board. Is there any board discussion on it? Seeing no discussion, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion passes. All right, Cassandra, foundation update.
Good evening. How are all of you doing? I would like to kick it off by talking about our fundraising achievement as of February the 24th, which is $1.6 million. So we're tracking very similarly to what we did last year. That is total fundraising achievement, which includes individual giving, our foundation, private, family, and community foundations, as well as our corporations and businesses that support us. I would like to thank each and every one of you for your participation in the inauguration dinner. That was really showcasing nearly 50 sponsors as well as community members that it was their first time being on our campus. And what a joy for them to see such a tremendous attendance from our trustee board and our board of directors of the foundation. Our gross fundraising achievement is nearly $184,000. And that's with no cash paddle raise, no live auctions, and no wine pulls. So there were no games of chance, so to speak. And so that was sheer sponsorships and people really wanting to celebrate the community and onboarding of President Gregory as the seventh president. We had nearly 400 people in attendance to a gymnasium that was transformed into a beautiful ballroom. And there were many comments that were saying, Trustee Goodson and I were commenting, I would like to rent this space for my event. So I thought, what a wonderful opportunity for the college to really rent that space and think of it in other ways. Evening Under the Stars is where we're headed now. And on April the 5th, we do have some wonderful opportunities for the Game of Chance. We just recently had a donation of an e-bike, a top 10 iconic type of thing that you've seen traveling around Manatee and Sarasota counties, as well as wonderful pieces of jewelry and more. So you don't want to miss Evening Under the Stars. That will be on April the 5th. Right now, our goal for that gross fundraising achievement is $146,925, and we're currently at $74,000. This particular event will include lots of games of chance and a cash paddle race. So we're very excited about that. One of the things that I need from you, and I'm asking each one of you to help me in this, is Trustee Reiner helped us at the Junior League of Sarasota County share the good mission of both the college and the foundation at that particular league event, where they had tables for nonprofit organizations and organizations that were of interest. And it was amazing to me when we were at that particular event, the networking opportunity with our alumni and those that were wanting to enroll either their favorite friend, their student, and or their boyfriends at State College of Florida. So it was a great opportunity, and we appreciate those opportunities as well as speaking engagements. We had a wonderful speaking engagement with the Venice Estate Planning Council. And I left with two formative meetings because many of those individuals manage as trustees of private and family foundations. These are the type of meetings that President Gregory would like to share the mission. So if you are a member, even if it's a book club, a supper club, things where you feel that people need to know about State College of Florida and the mission of the foundation, he is happy to share that mission with those individuals. Next week, we will be going, or this month, we'll be kicking it off with a presentation on March the 18th to the Brayton Kiwanis Club. And with that, we'll be taking along with us the SCF Presidential String Quartet, so they can see and learn more about our music programs and what our students are doing. So these are just some of the ideas. So if you could think of some of those clubs or organizations of which you belong, that it would be very helpful to share with our community what State College of Florida is doing, as well as the wonderful thing. I know our faculty have all left, but you can share some of their programs as well. So thank you very much. Any questions?
Great job, Ian.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. And I'll share those kudos with the board of directors, because I know that they were very nervous about having, we didn't originally plan to hit the numbers that we hit, because we didn't want to have all the additional fundraising elements, and because we really wanted it to be centered on celebrating President Gregory and those types of things. So our budget was originally designed with those elements in it, and so then we had to pivot when we knew that we were getting a new president. So thank you.
All right, thank you, Cassandra. Next up, old business. Anybody have old business to bring before the board? Seeing none, new business? Seeing none. We're on to board comments. Let's start over here with Mark.
I have none.
All right. Jamie?
it was a pretty emotional presentation by the faculty. Pretty impactful. I know it's a challenge for us to move the needle quickly on this topic of compensation and fair wages, and, or at least competitive compensation. I feel a little see that change.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Mike.
I just wanted to comment that I thought the presentation by Jason was really helpful, as we had the previous meeting when we were talking about the Gradnor Guards. And I just think it is, I know speaking for myself as a trustee, it's good for us to have, even though I know it makes the meeting run a little bit longer than they have in the past, but that's really helpful for us to hear, for me to hear and to understand. So, and your comment to the faculty that, hey, if you want an audience, we'll get you on the calendar. So I think I'd like that to be more of a normal part of our agenda. Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah, I like that idea too. Yep. Taylor?
I loved Jason's presentation, and I loved his comment about a bachelor's for your bachelor in cybersecurity. I'd love to try and help that along. And I was curious, do we ever bring students in our lobbying efforts when we go to Tallahassee at all?
I agree with my fellow trustees and all the comments they've made. To add something new to the conversation, I really want to express my incredible, just how impressed I was with the student speaker the night of the dinner of the inauguration. I spoke with her afterward, and I was very surprised to hear that she had never spoken in front of a group of people before. And it did just make me think it is so powerful, these stories that our students come with, but the opportunity to tell your story and to know how to tell it in a compelling way, whether it's for an inauguration dinner or advocacy efforts in Tallahassee, but curious if we can also help our students communicate that story. Maybe those resources already exist. Maybe more could be out there, not exactly a Toastmasters setup. But I told her that even though she's getting her degree in graphic design, to not settle or not stop there, but to really think about how she can continue to use her voice to make an impact.
That's awesome.
Right.
I get to talk for five more minutes. So,
that's not the rule.
Well, it kind of is tonight because Miss Rand over here is going to lose a bet, and I'm going to dinner tonight. No, just kidding. No, I ditto.
Hit your turn.
No, seriously. It was congratulations on your inauguration. That was wonderful. Sorry I had an episode on stage. I have stage fright, obviously. No, the lights, I didn't eat that day, and I was very high dehydrated, but thanks to the stage people, they were amazing. They got me pretty good backstage, so that's the reason I had to exit a little bit earlier, so that was embarrassing. But congratulations, and that's awesome. And I'd like to say also, yeah, the presentations are quite helpful. They're meaningful because each department are, love to hear the stories, because as a trustee, you literally, you don't know behind the scenes necessarily what's everyday life on campus, And so hearing those departments talk about their passions is wonderful. And I think that's quite the add to our subjective or substantive discussion.
Yeah, agreed. I also want to say the inauguration and the committee members were here that put it together and the co-chairs of it that worked so hard on it. It was awesome. The part that I was part of, I had a little issue too, because I was in a fender bender on the way to it. And so that made me late to get to the robing ceremony and all. And that's why I had to slip in the side. And what was really great is, of course, Susan's awesome. She makes so much happen. And she set me up with different people on the stage behind there to get me slipped back in the side so I could just slide right in there just before I had to go up and put the robe on, our new president. And that's what I really wanted to be there for. So I was thankful for that. And it's kind of amazing how smoothly bumpy roads can be when you have that really good team working it. And that's, that's what I got to experience there. And so I'm sorry that I missed the dinner, because I was kind of looking forward to that. But after the roving, because of everything, I was just a little bit wiped out, so I went home. But it was a tremendous event, I thought, and everything that I saw afterwards, and the fundraising numbers. So there's just a lot of kudos involved with the inauguration. And with that, we are adjourned. Love hitting that. Still do.